Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Another member of the World Series of Poker main event, November 9, Jason Sentai, a guy who is the short stack, but still got awfully rich by making it to that final nine. And he will join us a little bit later on in the show. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting aside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're right. Jason already has a nice check, and he has potential for an even bigger one.
That's
absolutely
that's
pretty
right.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, you and I have been talking about how things have been quiet for the last several weeks, I guess, after the main event ended. At least went on hold until November. Things quiet down for a while, don't they?
What it is a little bit of a lull. This is kind of the poker vacation a little bit. Not a lot. There's always things going on, but a little bit. But now look what it's picking up. PokerStars has got their EPT London coming up here shortly. The WSOP Europe is going to be coming up shortly. The telecasts on ESPN for the main event is going to start, I think, this week.
They start tonight. It's 7 there o'clock Central time.
Everything is picking back up. All of the fall tournaments are picking back up. All the shows are going to start picking back up. The Million Dollar Challenge and the rest of them. It's poker time, guys.
Yeah. Now, a couple of things I want to mention. You know, we'll be talking a lot about the main event over the next several weeks as we see how ESPN covers it and the storylines that they develop and some Lon and Norman's funny stuff there.
Yeah.
But remember before this whole thing started, back when you and I were doing shows in May and even at the Rio as it was getting underway, everybody was speculating that this would be the year of the woman.
Yep.
We've talked about Annette Oberstadt and the big hype that was behind her, which it wasn't a matter of it not being deserved. It was just unfair.
Absolutely.
To her. You were the one who said that. 3% of the main event field this year, women.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about this often on this show, about women's only poker tournaments and getting more women involved in poker. And we heard from Nolan Dalla, the media director of the WSOP, back in January on this show, that he has been doing everything within his power to get those numbers up. But every year, they're between 3 and 4% of the field. Now, I'll grant you, this was the second biggest field in main event history after the Jamie Gold year. But still, 3% doesn't seem to be a great showing.
It's not, and I'm not for sure what we do next. Nolan actually had some very valid arguments, and he kind of convinced me that maybe the women-only tournaments and the rest of it, there is a justifiable reason for that.
Yeah.
We've got to find some way to make them more comfortable in the room. We've got to find some way to so that they can become more proficient at it. I guarantee, it doesn't hurt me to say this, some of the women that I have played against are some of the best players I've ever played against.
Absolutely.
These are some tremendous players, and there's a lot of untapped potential out there.
Yep.
So no matter what you do, some way or other, we've got to get the other half of the population involved more.
Yep. A couple of weeks ago when I was in Tunica at the World Poker Open, Vanessa Russo was down there, as was her husband, Chad Brown, and got to talking to her for a little bit. And she was down there doing one of her big stack boot camps. And more than half of that is women.
Yep.
Now, of course, part of that has got to be women want to learn from a woman. So if we could get more women to teach poker, maybe that would be really part of it.
I think any avenue we can do. It's an untapped wealth of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Involving somebody like Vanessa. By the way, Vanessa is extremely intelligent, extremely aggressive, goes out there and really works her tail off.
Yep.
So, she is one of the highlights, I guess you'd say, of the women within this industry. Some of the others, and it's just not in their personality, would rather just play cards.
Right.
And they have that right.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with doing that.
I'll name two women for you right now. Jennifer Harmon.
Yep.
Kathy Liebert. Both, by the way, this week named to be the inductees for the Women in Poker Hall of Fame. They'll have that ceremony at the Golden Nugget on September 3rd. I know you were there for one either last year or the year before.
Last year was actually the inaugural year of it. I went there. I actually sponsored a table. They induced everybody from Jan Fisher on. I think there were five inductees last year.
I think that's right.
And those are the inaugural ones, and now they're adding to it, and two quality names they're adding to it.
Plus a woman by the name of Billy Brown, the late Billy Brown, who was one of the few women to run a poker room and run poker tournaments all the way back into the 70s when you didn't see many women in poker rooms unless they were serving cocktails.
That's true, unfortunately.
Yeah, so she's most recently she was running things at Ocean's 11 in San Diego, mm-hmm. and she's been involved in the poker world for a long time. So she'll be inducted there along with Kathy Liebert, the winningest female poker tournament player.
6 million plus, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. And, of course, Jen, who, you know, if you can hold your own in the big game at Bobby's Room at the Bellagio week in, week out, that makes you one of the best players in the world. That, to me, is the defining line right there.
Let's put it this way. If you're at a cash game and you sit down and you see both of them at the same table, look for another table.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So they'll be inducted on November 3rd, just announced this week, and congratulations to them. A couple of other things I want to talk about here off the top of the show. There's a guy in New Mexico named Sam McMaster Jr., who nobody has ever heard of that I know of. I called a couple of poker people this week. Have you ever heard of this guy? No, never heard of him. And they were all surprised to hear this story that I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
Sam used to be a stockbroker and apparently pulled some sort of Bernie Madoff kind of scam on a lot of people. And he has admitted, he's confessed to 26 felony charges of securities fraud. Could get up to 74 years in prison for that.
Okay, I have no clue where you're going with this.
Okay, what does this have to do with poker?
Exactly.
Well, like I said, he plays poker and is going to play poker. They let him out of jail before the sentencing. You know, he's out released on his own recognizance because he's not a violent threat to society, the prosecutor said. While he's out, he's going to be allowed to play in cash games and tournaments in an effort to get the money to compensate his victims. $444,000 he took from more than 20 different people. And so he's going to go out and play for the 6 months before the sentencing occurs to see if he can get the money to pay those people back, which, of course, would make the judge probably give him a lesser sentence.
Which, with the blessing of the judge.
The court has said not only can he play poker, he can travel within the United States to play poker. So he doesn't have to stay in New Mexico. I don't even know if there are poker rooms in New Mexico. Do you? Have you ever played there?
I have not.
I know they have them next door in Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
But he can go to Vegas. He could go to L.A. He could come here to St. Louis and play in tournaments here at Harrah's. Or he could go anywhere. Listen to this. He has to make restitution payments while he's playing of $7,500 a month. If he misses two payments, back in the slammer. So talk about having to make your nut every month. This is not a guy who's a little bit stuck in a cash game. Uh-huh. This guy is stuck with a potential life sentence, 74 years. That, you know, the guy could go away for the rest of his life.
Well, that's probably not going to happen, but you're right.
Even if it's a dozen years that he's looking at, facing, $7,500 a month he has to play. Now, I don't know, again, what kind of games he's going to get involved in or what that is, but $7,500 a month, let's say that's $2,000 a week.
Yep.
He's got to play, you know, if he plays four sessions a week, he's got to average $500 every session for an entire month. Again, I don't know how good the guy is or what kind of tournaments he's playing in, but that's not easy.
That could be an interesting bad beat if he gets sucked out on. Do you realize what you just did to me?
Talk about the ultimate bad beat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You lost and you're going to jail. There's your go to jail card. Literally. The guy, you think you got the nut flush, the guy hits the straight flush on the river. That's your go to jail card for Sam McMasters.
Have I got a story for you? Yeah, I can just see him telling
that. Yeah, I love that story. as we mentioned, the main event coverage starts tonight on ESPN, but it is far from the only poker that's on TV. The Big Game, the Poker Stars TV show that unfortunately does not air on the Fox station in St. Louis, but does air on other Fox affiliates across the country. I watched it last night, or rather this morning, on the website, PokerStars.tv, where you can see it, and, you know, it's great quality there. The show's been off for about 3 weeks, and they're back with another session that I guess was recorded in the spring. They've got PokerStars Team Pro Barry Greenstein, plus Chow Jang. Talk about people who play in the big game at Bobby's Room. He's a regular there, isn't he?
Yep.
Not exactly the most vibrant person on TV. He's a kind of tight player, and because he has a little bit of problem with English, he's quiet at the table. At the other end of that, you got Antonio Esfandiari.
Definitely on the other end.
Yeah. And then you got Viffer, David Pete.
The nice, tight, conservative player.
Who, as far as I'm concerned, is my hero for the King 9 against Phil Hellmuth on Poker After Dark earlier this year.
Yeah, but Viffer does have a standing qualification, though. He won't play unless he gets two cards.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Then the loose cannon is a guy from Michigan named Troy Howard. But here's the interesting thing. It's a six-person table, as we've talked about in the past. The sixth person is, and this is what they call him on the show, millionaire businessman Rick Rahim. I did a little research on Rick Rahim. He's a guy from Chantilly, Virginia, which is about an hour west of Washington, D.C. And I used to live in Virginia, and I know there's no poker room anywhere nearby there. You want to play poker in that part of the country, you got to play in home games.
Okay.
And it turns out that Rick Rahim has a home game, or at least he had a home game that was busted a couple of years ago. And apparently there was quite a bit of money there, so much money that they had an off-duty cop doing security for them.
Okay.
How do you think that goes down, by the way, with the 12 cops who show up to bust the game, and one of their colleagues is there? That that cop got in quite a bit of trouble.
Yeah, walks in the door and, oh, hi, Fred, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Rick got in trouble because you're allowed to have a home game as long as you don't take a rake.
Yeah.
And apparently he was. And so, you know, he's had some problems with the law. I think he's going to have more problems this week on the show because, as I said, I watched the first episode of the week on PokerStars.tv. This guy is playing way too many hands. You know, they have that VPIP, voluntarily put in pot figure.
Which and I do like.
And you would figure at a table like this that Viffer would be the one who's putting the most in and being the most aggressive at the table. This guy, Rahim, is playing more hands and being more aggressive than Viffer, and he's not that good. He also talks way too much at the table. Now, you haven't had a chance to see it yet, have
you? No, I have not. I have not seen the episode.
I'll urge you and our listeners to watch it online, and he'll be on all week. What they do is they do one long session. Right.
Okay.
Right? And they cut it down into a whole week of shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one loose cannon against those five players, and they play for the whole week. And if this guy keeps playing as the week goes along, the pros, the four pros there, Greenstein, Esfandiari, Jang, and Viffer are going to look to the millionaire as the loose cannon at the table, the one that they want to play against and get the money from.
So you're saying by Wednesday they'll be referring to him as the former millionaire businessman.
Well, you know, the loose cannon might be the tight cannon compared to this guy. Just something to watch for if you check out the big game.
Sounds good.
Also on TV this week, Poker TV this week, the latest installment of Poker After Dark. Because Antonio's not getting enough stuff on the big game, he's also on this one. And, you know, we love Maury Esfandiari.
Oh, yeah.
The producer of Poker After Dark and High Stakes Poker.
Mm-hmm.
We think he makes among the best televised poker there is. But, you know, they've been doing theme weeks for a while. One week it was Nicknames Week. Mm-hmm. And various players who had nicknames were around the table. And they've done, you know, Boy-Girl Week. This one, I think, may be among the weakest themes they've ever done. It's Bachelor's Week. Six guys who don't have a wife. Eric Lindgren, Antonio Esfandiari, Mike Matisau, David Williams, Brad Booth, and James Aikenhead, who was at the final table of the main event last year. They're all in there playing for $20,000. Now, you played on Poker After Dark. Was there a theme the week you played?
None whatsoever, I don't think.
Although that was a cash game.
That was the cash.
So the cash game weeks, they don't need a theme. The theme is, look, we have a lot of money on the table.
Yeah.
And is that your own money when you sit down on Poker
After Dark?
Absolutely,
every penny of it.
So these guys have all ponied up $20,000.
Correct.
And is winner take all when it's a tournament week like it is this week. So it's six bachelors going for $120,000. That's like a dating game week.
That one I don't understand.
One more Poker TV thing, and then we'll take a break and we'll get to our guest. You know the show Cash Cab on the Discovery Channel?
Yes, I do. I have watched it. And hate to admit that, but yes, I have watched
it. Well, I think it's a fun show.
It actually does. It's got some good questions. I like trivia. I like Jeopardy. I like things like that. So actually, it's not too bad.
Me too. It's a real New York cab driver named Ben Bailey who drives around in the cash cab, and people get in, unsuspecting people get in, and they're on a TV game show, and they get to answer questions while he's taking them to their actual destination. And they can win like $800 or $1,000.
Well, yeah, but that's sort of not thing. The point. The two things that really happen to make it interesting, in my opinion, there are some interesting questions to kind of test your own knowledge.
Yes.
But also then the response from some of the other people, some of the answers they come up with are so ludicrous
yes.
that they can be entertaining.
Well, this week, or not this week, but last night, they did four episodes that they shot in Vegas. And it seemed to me like everybody who got in the cab was a celebrity. Lance Burton and his juggler, Michael Godot from the Monte Carlo. And Penn and Teller got in. And Louis Anderson and Carrot Top got in.
Together?
Well, I think Carrot Top may have had to sit in the back.
Okay, good enough.
They had three people from Cirque du Soleil.
Did they ride in or on the cab?
They did not.
Okay, go ahead. No, never mind.
That would have been great.
That would have worked well.
To have one of them climb up and do some acrobatics on top of the cab.
See him poke his head in the window or something.
And they also had two poker players.
Okay.
Now, when I say TV and poker player, who's the first person you know has got to be on the show?
There's no way. Phil in the cab answering questions.
Yep. Phil, Hellmuth.
I'm really curious who he had with him.
Robert Williamson III.
I was sure you were going to say Mike Maniscalco.
No.
Okay.
Robert Williamson III. They get picked up and they're being taken to wherever they were going to. And Ben Bailey, the host, turns around and says, guys, introduce yourself. So, you know, you let Phil introduce himself. And, of course, he's going to say...
Was it the end of the show? Okay,
we're out of time now.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, I'm Phil Hellmuth Jr., 11-time world champion of poker.
He didn't really, did
he? Yes, 11-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner and world champion of poker.
Okay.
And then Robert Williamson III says, I'm Robert Williamson III, also known as the best Omaha player in the world. Okay, so now they presented themselves as big shot poker players. All right, fine, I understand that. You both have egos, fine. They completely strike out on the show. They only get to answer a few questions, and if you get three wrong, Ben pulls the cab over to the side of the road, and you have to get out. These guys had to get out. Here's one of the questions that they had to ask. The first question, I think. Known as Muttertag, what holiday was promoted in 1920s Germany in an effort to boost the low birth rate? Muttertag. Now, Robert Williamson III says, well, I know in German, Tag is afternoon, which it isn't. It's day.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you're a trivia guy. What known as Muttertag.
And Mother's Day.
Correct.
Yeah, Mother's that's simple. Day. What's the question?
Exactly. Not if you're Phil Hellmuth Jr., 11-time world champion of poker.
Okay, nope. Guys, I have never heard these questions before. This is the first time.
The correct answer, if you're Phil, is Valentine's Day. Because Valentine's Day would boost the low birth rate? What? It was from that moment. That was the first question, and I knew these guys are not getting to their destination.
Okay, are they're going to owe money instead of getting it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that was on Cash Cab last night.
Whatever.
So let's take a break here, and then we'll come back and meet a guy who's actually going for some pretty big cash.
Yep.
One of this year's November 9, Jason Sentai joins us, and we come back in a moment here on The Final Table. First, this portion of the show is brought to you, as always, by PokerStars.net.
Yes, and we've got some great news coming up on September 5th. The WCUP stops. That's a world championship of online poker. This is a chance, guys. Go to PokerStars.net, sign up for it, download the software, and start playing. Doesn't cost you a dime. And I'm telling you, the rewards are astronomical. You can play with some of the best people in the world from all over the world for some unbelievable prizes. And if that isn't enough, you can go on there and play again for the big game, what we talked about earlier, and a chance to become that loose cannon, to sit down at a table with a Barry Greenstein or this millionaire businessman who decides that he has more money than he really cares to keep, evidently.
Yeah.
So many opportunities here. And again, like I've said in the last couple of weeks, you would not believe the places that you can win free trips to go to Australia, to go to Europe. I will be over at about the first week of October in London at the EPT. If you want to join me, go to PokerStars.net, download the software, and start playing. Tell you what, if you want to learn the game and you want to learn it right and you want to play the stuff and you want to get some phenomenal prizes, go to PokerStars.net.
He's Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We are live at Harrah's St. Louis for the final table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
A couple weeks ago on the show, we introduced you to John Reisner, who is one of the November 9 this year. He is eighth in chips when it comes to the final nine. And here's the guy who's right behind him. In ninth place. Oh, I'm sorry. Jason, John is not in eighth place?
No, he's in fourth place.
You're right. John's in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, he's in fourth place.
In the 4, 5, 6. Well, yeah. Here's the guy who is going to be the short stack. You can't dispute me on this one. He's got 7.625 million in chips. And when I first saw where he was from, I only saw the first two words, and I went, oh, wow, a guy from St. Louis. Yeah. Turns out he's from St. Louis Park, yeah. Minnesota. Jason Sentai, welcome to the final table.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, he may be the short stack, but I'm telling you, there's 7,300 people who would love to trade places with him right now. So congratulations, and very well done.
Yeah, thank you very much. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to come on here and be angry introduced as the short stack, undisputed, but I am definitely happy to be in the position I am. It'd be nice to have a few more chips, but very thrilled to be part of the November 9 this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. For a couple more months, you're going to be the short stack. The idea is to, at the end of this, still have the stack.
Yeah, this is true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like I said, you're one of only 9 people to have a chance to win that bracelet, the one that everybody wants. So, you know, you need to be proud of that. Got a question for you kind of leading into this. How important, I think you actually got it. Some people don't, but I think you did. How important is it to be one of those November 9?
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's, you know, probably the most important bubble going from 10 to 9 that we have in all of poker. I think being part of the November 9, especially this early on in the history of it, maybe this will change down the road. But right now, I mean, this still has only been done a few times. I think it's just as big of a stage that exists in the poker world. So I felt making the 9, once you got to a place where you're really close, was very, very important.
So how did you handle that bubble?
Well, I went into the actual bubble from 10 to 9, not in a great situation. With a few more people left, you know, the 13, 14 people range, I was, you know, middle of the pack going into the day. I was, you know, top 5 in chips. And so I was feeling good most of the time. Right before we got to 10 players, though, I pretty much lost half my stack. I went from having a little over 20 million at one point to then having about 10. And I was in a unique situation where there were a couple people who had shorter stacks than me. Specifically, the player who went out in 10th, who was substantially shorter stack than I was, going into the final 10 people with, you know, 4 or 5 million chips, and I had 10. I was in a spot where I realized that there's not a lot I can do. I really do have to play this as a satellite and do what I can to get to the 9, at least when there's one or two guys shorter than me. If I had ever reached a point where I was the short stack, the situation just has to change. Not completely, but it would change a little bit. So for me, I did end up playing it kind of like a satellite bubble situation, meaning I played very tight and did what I could not to get myself into situations where I was risking my whole stack, considering that one of these other players should go out before me at some point.
Did you have any situations there? And I like the way you think of, you know, treating it like a mega, but were there situations where you actually had a hand and you had a really tough decision to make?
Yeah, pretty much just one. For the most part, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, I really was pretty card dead anyway. If I wasn't card dead, I still would have been playing tight poker. But I most of the time didn't have much going on, and this thing dragged on for a long time, so really ate away at my stack. I did have one situation that was very difficult, though, where I ended up folding an overpair post-flop, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be made fun of on ESPN for that. I can go through it if you'd like.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, while we were sitting there, you know, a few hours now into this, you know, bubble situation, I had pretty much gotten most of my chips actually from the player I played this hand against, so I win. I had opened a few times in late position, but not a lot. I knew that, you know, the good players on my left know this situation is important to me, and they had big stacks. They could mess with me. So as a result, I played tight. But one thing I could do is do the same thing to people who are in a similar spot to me. And Soy Wynn was on my right, and I knew he had, you know, slightly fewer chips or similar chips to me the whole time, so I could mess with him. So when he would raise, I would oftentimes re-raise him very small just because he's in the same spot where he really can't be putting a lot of money in without very premium hands. So that worked out pretty well for me to, you know, gain some chips and stay afloat. I did it two orbits in a row. Then he really shut down. It was a good adjustment from him. Just got very, very tight and didn't play a hand for four or five orbits. Then he ends up making a raise from early position, and I look down at two queens. Now, the last couple times I've re-raised him with air, you know, like whatever my hands were, I don't even remember. But now I have two queens, and it was a weird spot. I think I had around 14 million. He had somewhere between 10 and 12 million. And I really actually wasn't that thrilled about raising and getting it in against him. I know two queens is usually a pretty easy thing to do it, but, you know, we're in a spot now. Getting to nine is really important. And because of that, he should also be really only getting in a very tight range against me. So I decided, you know, I'll make a call and maybe hope that one of these good aggressive players behind me will decide they can mess around with us because, you know, we're two stacks who have to play tight and maybe re-raise and then I can get it in against one of them because they'll have a lot weaker hands in their range. Any case, nobody else played and the flop came down Jack 7 something. I'll just say Jack 7 deuce for simplicity. Jack 7 deuce with two diamonds. He continuation bet and I ended up just calling. Similar thing now, if I raise and get it in, I think I'm pretty much going to get it in against a range of, you know, aces, kings, maybe queens, unlikely because I have two queens, maybe ace-jack, but I'm not even sure about that, and then, like, sets and big draws that I'm flipping with. Once again, not a spot I really want to get into when we're talking about this bubble, and I'm comfortable playing, you know, playing turns and seeing, you know, getting more information, seeing how the hand plays out. So I called the flop. Turn was a blank, you know, let's, you know, call it a four. And he ends up shoving all in. It was a little bit of an overbet. I don't remember the exact stack sizes, but let's say there was 5 million in the middle and he went all in for 6 million, 7 million, somewhere in that range. And it was a spot where, really, I think he's going to have a big draw pretty often, you know, like an ace, king of diamonds, which still, you know, has like 30% equity against me. But he's also going to have those aces, kings, sets, hands like that that really just want to get the money in now while he's a big favorite or get me to fold because it's so important for either of us to both, you know, win this pot and then stay in the tournament. So putting it all together really against a range of hands that have me crushed or have a pretty good draw against me when it was basically for the November 9, I ended up making a really tight fold with pocket queens. Talking to him afterwards, I'm pretty sure he had ace-king of diamonds. I think it was the correct way for him to play it. And even though I, you know, was tired and it had been a long week, looking back on it, even knowing his hand, I think it was a correct play against the range of hands he'd, you know, would have done it with. Even though it will not be portrayed that way on ESPN, I'm sure, because it looks pretty weird to fold an overpair against what's probably ace high.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that. I think a good quality player will understand why you did it and probably agree with you. I would have had a hard time playing the queens since I didn't push pre-flop against him after the flop comes out there and then he gets his chips in first. Yeah, the range of hands he could have is pretty slim. He could have had the aces. He could have had the kings. He could have that ace-king of diamonds. I mean, there's a wide range of them. And even with the ace-king of diamonds, there's so many outs there. And
yeah,
you're playing
absolutely.
To get down to the nine.
Yeah.
No, to me, that's not a bad laydown.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd have played it quite the same way, but I definitely can see the way you played it, and I see no problem with it. I don't think you look bad on ESPN at all, not to a good card player.
And this is a perfect example of bubble play, which we've talked about so many times in so many different situations. But in this situation, it, as Jason said, it's the biggest bubble in the world. You get on this, you're going to be one of the November 9. You go out in 10th place,
yeah,
you're forgotten.
Exactly. Name the 10th place in either of the two last years.
Yeah.
I can, but you know, very, very few people could.
Right.
Couple of quick things. When we talked about the satellite, just so the viewers realize it, a lot of times when you play a satellite, they're awarding maybe 15 satellite seats. So 1 through 15 get the very same thing. 16th doesn't. So you don't want to be the guy that goes out 16th.
Right.
He's talking the same thing here. 1
so
through
you don't
9.
So you don't have to accumulate chips.
Correct.
All you got to do is wait out the rest of the field.
You just got to be one of those top 15. In this case, you just have to be one of those top 9. And I agree with Jason on this. It's such a huge difference between 9th and 10th. I would have been playing tight 2 with a short stack, I'm quite sure. But
yeah, and I, you know, to clarify that a little bit, it isn't 100% of a satellite situation because there's a lot of money at the top. Obviously, going into the final table with chips is the situation I wanted. It would also be different if I felt that the players who were on my left, who could act after me, weren't necessarily good poker players who were thinking about my situation.
Yep.
If I felt they were substantially weaker players than me, I wouldn't worry about it that much. I'd be like, well, you know what? They're scared to go out too. let's play some poker and make, you know, if I can build up a few chips, then I'm in this great spot to abuse this bubble situation. Unfortunately, the players on my left were very good, and I know they're smart enough to realize how important this is to me. So they really would end up messing with me. And, you know, at that point going into it, you have to make a choice then. Do you want to play a tighter approach where I should get to the nine pretty often, or do you decide you're just going to go to war against these guys on your left, hope you pick up hands, and if you don't, hope they never call you when you shove all in, which is really a pretty high variance approach to something that's really, really important for me to do for my career. So I'm happy with the way I did it.
Absolutely. And like I said, you are one of the nine. And you bring up so many points that I've stressed on this show, knowing the chip count of your opponents, knowing the play patterns and the type of players and the quality of players that the people sitting at the table with you, and being able to put people on a range of hands or a narrower range of hands. And you brought up all of these things, which, you know, I keep stressing on the show that people need to learn how to do.
Yeah, I want to go back to one thing about this, Jason. You made a very interesting comment before about how you called preflop with your queens, hoping that one of the bigger stacks would make a move. Now, in that situation, a bigger stack might want to try to isolate against the original raiser,
sure.
Soy, by coming in with anything from a pair of sixes on up, right?
I mean, somewhere in that range, absolutely.
Maybe sevens, eights, certainly nines and higher. They're going to get in there. Even with an ace queen, they might want to isolate against him. Now, the situation for you would be interesting. Let's say one of those guys did make a big enough bet to put both you and Soy in, and now Soy has the ace king of diamonds, and he decides, fine, I'm going to play for my tournament life with my ace king of diamonds. Now, what are you going to do with your queens? Are you still calling?
Yeah, this is a situation I thought of, you know, when I decided to make the call pre-flop. And just because, you know, something to clarify and point out to people, if they're thinking, well, boy, it sure be disastrous for you to call and then get pushed out of the pot. You know, if the, you know, somebody else does make a big raise and then Soy gets it in, and let's say I decide, well, now I have to fold because there's a good chance Soy could go out here and I really don't want to be part of this three-way all-in. If that were the spot, and let's say it's easier with a hand like pocket jacks, that actually isn't a bad result for me because I gain that extra information about Soy's hand. Soy isn't going to just put all his money in preflop with a weak hand. So as a result from, you know, making the call and having somebody else make a move, he has to act again before I get to. So I get to narrow down his range even further and then make that decision. As regards to what I'd actually do with queens, it's very close, and it would depend basically 100% on who it was making the move. About half the guys who were left to act behind, I would have decided to go with the queens, even with Soy in the hand. One important thing is that I have Soy covered by like $4 million. So it makes a little bit of a difference there, or at least a few million chips. And then if it were, you know, some of the other guys who I really don't think, you know, a few of these guys really aren't messing around at all in that spot, especially the shorter to medium stacks. Against those guys, you know, I'd probably fold and, you know, hope to see a spot where Soy goes out and I make the November 9.
Yeah. Okay. The interesting thing there is if the three of you do play and the big stack wins there, we have a November 8. For the first time ever.
Good point. Now that would be awesome.
This is the Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. We're talking with November Niner Jason Sentai. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more as we continue live from Harris, St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast on thechipleader.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the Final Table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Actually next to me for the second week in a row. This is stunning. He's not adding to that 100,000 miles right now. We're actually here at Harris Poker Room. A quick plug for this place, by the way, which once again today had, I think, at least 8 tables in their 1 o'clock tournament, plus another half dozen tables of live cash games going on. The tournaments here are getting more and more popular all the time. Whether you're the kind of person who wants to come and play just a $40 buy-in, or you want to play the $160 buy-in on Thursday nights, or the once-a-month $310 buy-in, they do tournaments twice a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You can get the schedule by going to harris.com/STLpoker, or you can call their poker room hotline to find out what games are going on. If you're a cash game player as I am, you just call 314-770-7600. That's 770-7600 in the St. Louis area, and they'll fill you in on what's going on. I can tell you that on a Friday, recently, they had not just 1-2 and 2-5, no limit, but also 20-40 limit. There was a 5-10 horse game going on, plus a 3-6 limit game and a 1-2-5 PLO game going on, all here in a packed poker room, in addition to the Friday night tournament. So this has really become the place to come play in town. If you're a poker player, come visit Harrah's St. Louis or online at harrahs.com/STLpoker. Now back to our guest here on the final table, Jason Sentai, who is one of the November 9 this year for the World Series of Poker when they get back into the Rio. What are you planning on doing between now and November? Are you going to play any other big events, Jason?
Yeah, I'm planning on at least going to a few. I'd like to go to a bunch, but I have a lot going on here over the next few months. I'm at least going to go to the World Series of Poker Europe and the EPT London. So
excellent.
Both of those are in London, and I plan to go out there mid-September and, you know, stay through the beginning of October and try and play a few events out there. After that, I'm not sure for live events, but definitely going to be playing some poker online, doing training at bluefirepoker.com, and hitting the golf course a little bit.
Yeah, I tried the golf course yesterday. It's not very friendly to me. But
it never has been to me, but it doesn't stop me.
Well, I'll tell you right now that I'll be down in Argentina. I may miss the WSOP Europe, but I will be there for the EPT London for sure. And we need to get together and sit down and have a meal and relax, maybe talk some things. I mean, I'd love to if you want to.
Oh, yeah, I'd be thrilled. That would be outstanding. We'll definitely set that up.
Got a couple of quick questions for you, kind of going naturally where we were to making the bubble when you made the November 9. Now, if I remember right, you got just under 8 million in chips, blinds?
Yeah, about 15 big blinds, 15,
about,
16.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're getting way the heck up there. Do you have enough, actually, to be honest about it, do you have enough chips to actually play poker? Or is this a one-hand deal or a two-hand deal where you have to make your decisions and go?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a more simplified game of poker than I prefer, especially as a cash game player. I like playing with, you know, 100, 200, 300 big blinds and
sure.
having a lot of stuff I can do post-flop. But 15 big blinds is still, you know, a little bit of room to maneuver. It's not like I have three or four big blinds and really there's nothing I can do. Basically, I can, you know, I can raise a few hands pre-flop and, you know, at least have a little bit of flop play, not much past the flop, but some. And also I can re-raise people all in pre-flop, you know, at least trying to take advantage of situations that I think are good to do so, either with big hands or against somebody who I think is opening, you know, pretty light, with weaker hands. So a little bit of poker, but not a ton. I am going to need to get lucky pretty early on and find a double up. And if I can do that, then, yeah, I'm pumped to start playing some poker on a big stage.
But you are in that position, which is still kind of nice. You get one double up. That's all it takes is one double up because you've got almost 8 million in chips by the time you figure antes and blinds and the rest of it. You can suddenly go from 8 million to 18 million very easily in a hand. And all of a sudden, then
yeah,
you're right in the middle
sure.
of the pack. So you're one hand away from being, as you said, able to play normal poker.
Yeah, obviously I had to have some good fortune to even get to where I am. There's no doubt about it. To get this deep in such a massive tournament, a lot of things had to go my way. I'm just hoping I can you know, have one more hand go my way early on. And then we'll go from there and, you know, at least be in the middle of the pack and be able to play a little poker, just like you said.
Yeah, the other way to look at it is you're only 8 double ups away from winning the thing.
Well, that's one way to look at it. But you bring up an interesting point, though, because you are the short stack. There is a power to the short stack because you do have that shovability. People are going to worry about, you know, raising and getting involved in hands with you because you're liable to be the guy that suddenly go, no, you bet $750,000? Sorry. I'd make it $8 million.
Well, let me ask you about that, Dennis, since you were there 2 years ago and Kelly Kim was the short stack there, and he effectively played one hand.
Kelly came in there extremely short stack. Kelly is also an extremely tight player. And his whole goal sitting down there, he talked to me ahead of it, says, if I can finish eighth, I will have won.
Instead of ninth. Yeah.
That was his whole,
which he
whole
did.
Deal. Which he did, yes. We won't go into
his
that.
His situation was different.
It absolutely
I, you know,
was.
I don't remember exactly what his stack was, but I'm kind of thinking that looking back on the situation, that was probably the correct strategy for him. I think, didn't he go in with like three or four big blinds or something substantially smaller than what I had?
Yeah, he had 2.2 million when he sat down there. And our blinds, I think, were 250 and 500,000. So he had basically not even a full three orbits, and he would have been out. So, yeah.
For sure. So him moving up one position really is a victory there.
Yes.
Obviously, I'm still short, but I am sitting with, you know, three to four times the stack size he had going.
Oh, absolutely.
In,
Jason, you mentioned BlueFirePoker.com. That's a training site, and I think Phil Galfond is associated with that site. What's your relationship with him?
Yeah, Phil started Blue Fire Poker about a year and a half ago, you know, an online training site where we make, you know, training or instructional videos, teach people how to play poker or to improve if they already are good players. And he asked me to come on board before it started. I didn't know him beforehand, but through a mutual friend, I was asked to make an audition video kind of thing to see if he'd be I'd be the type of person he'd want to have on his site training his customers. And he, you know, felt it was a good fit and asked me to come on. So since then, I've been working with him at Blue Fire, making regular videos, making several a month. And, you know, since that point, he and I have become good friends and, you know, have hung out a good amount in Vegas over the last few years and all that. So at this point, I consider him, you know, a friend that I can talk to strategy about going into the final table and, you know, just talk poker with in general. And he's obviously, to anybody who knows the online world, one of the best out there. So this, it's a great thing to have him as a friend.
And this doesn't hurt your credibility as an instructor. Oh, and by the way, I'm one of the November 9. So
yeah,
well done.
Yeah, most definitely. I assume it isn't hurting Blue Fire anyway.
Did Phil stake you into this thing?
No, he didn't. I've been playing professionally now for 3 years. So, you know, I'm generally pretty much 100% on my own in whatever tournaments I, you know, decide to play. This is actually the first summer that I took it a little easy on the World Series. Last few summers I played, you know, up to 15 events in the summer. This one I took it way easy and played three. I played the two PLO events the week before, 10K and a 5K, and then the main event. I actually did also, first time for me, sell a little bit of my action in most of these events. In the three events, I sold a smallish percentage of myself just to reduce the variance a little bit. After, you know, several summers in a row of going out to the World Series and dropping large amounts of money, I decided to take it a little easier this year, and that's when I hit. So there are some people with some small pieces of me out there, but I was not fully staked in this. No.
So it's not all your $811,823 yet. The government takes a piece, and some friends take a little bit. But you and your bride Jessica, who I think you married just a couple of years ago. You still got a nice hefty chunk of change there.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly was a nice score. Even if I, you know, do finish in ninth place here, my cut of the money after, you know, as I said, paying other people and the government is still a very large sum of money, and it really does make life a little bit easier, at least in the upcoming months, and allows me to kind of get ahead on things and at least start putting money away. That's been a pretty big focus for me since I've been playing poker. I'm young enough that, you know, at 28 years old, that I feel like if I can put away a good chunk of money now at this age, I probably can be in a spot where I can retire pretty young. So,
well, I know that everything changes when you make the November 9. I got a kind of a curious question. Have you picked up any more gigs for Suburban Hero?
We actually have. Yeah, I've been playing in a band here locally, Minneapolis Suburban Hero, for quite some time now. And, yeah, we've been approached by a number of bar owners who, you know, are people we haven't played at their locales before, but we've been hit up saying, hey, I'm a big poker fan and own this bar. Will you come play and maybe do some interviews beforehand? So, yeah, it's definitely not hurting the band, that's for sure. We didn't have a hard time getting gigs before, but now we have bars, you know, that we did not approach in any way just coming out after us. So, yeah, the November 9 changes quite a bit.
Let me go back to Phil Galfond for a second in the training site, BlueFirePoker.com. You're teaching people on there how to play poker. Now, you're in a situation where I know you'll talk to Dennis about what it's like to be a November 9er and how to best exploit that and all that, and you probably have talked to others as well. Who's helping you with strategy for the November 9? Are you and Phil sitting down and talking about that? Are there other pros you're bringing in?
Yeah, actually, as of right now, I haven't done really any strategizing for the November 9. I've pretty much been doing interviews and stuff nonstop since getting home. But I do plan to spend most of my, you know, strategizing time with Phil. He's just an outstanding resource. I also have a number of other good high-stakes, friends in the poker world who I will certainly hit them up for advice as well to discuss strategy. I don't intend to hire anybody, like I know a lot of people did in the past. I think it makes sense in a lot of scenarios, but for me as a professional who has, you know, a very good network of other professionals, as friends, I think it makes more sense for me to just discuss with them and, give this thing a shot.
Well, I agree with you on a lot of that. And talking it over with people that really know poker in depth never hurts. You may get 10
Absolutely.
Different opinions, but you know, you can then weed out and take the best one, whatever scenario fits you. It still comes down, it's going to be you playing at the table, and you have to play your game and what you're comfortable with. So I agree with that.
Absolutely agree.
All right. You also have signed now with PokerStars. Why PokerStars, and how is that going?
Well, during the main event, you know, I got approached by a number of agents, as pretty much everybody did. Uh-huh. This year was really a lot more of a circus with the agents because the sites were signing everybody a lot earlier. I actually held off kind of the beginning because I was wearing Blue Fire gear, and most of the standard contracts won't allow me to do that at the same time. As time went on, I really got approached primarily by other sites. But once I did get approached by PokerStars, I was far more comfortable taking a deal from them simply because of my experiences with the site. I mean, they, you know, really have no blemishes on their record, and this is somebody who, you know, plays online poker every day for a living. I know what the sites have done. Great customer service, you know, largest poker room on earth with the most players. So when they came and approached me and offered me, you know, a deal that I felt was reasonable, I thought it was a very easy decision to go with them just because, you know, I trust them as a business entity, which is pretty hard to do in the world that we work.
You know, you don't have to tell us how much it is, but we always hear from listeners. In fact, a couple of weeks ago on the show, we were talking about, you know, how do you work the patch deals or the hat deals or whatever it is, that sort of stuff. I got an email after our last discussion about that from a guy by the name of Jeff who wants to know, if you make the final table and you're wearing the gear, does the site still give you a bonus as it used to? So you don't have to tell us if the answer is, what the answer is in terms of a number, but you could just tell us, is there a special bonus that PokerStars is giving you because you're a November Niner?
Yeah, of course I wouldn't feel comfortable going into totals, but yes, they do give a bonus for making the November 9. I think really that's the primary goal of most of these poker sites signing everybody or a lot of players early on, is to be able to try and, you know, lock up as many November 9 seats as they can in the process.
And is there another bonus for winning?
Yeah, the bonus has changed, you know, based on where you are when you finish a tournament.
Because it means more TV time for PokerStars.
Obviously, it's real simple.
Yeah, it has to. And also, I mean, you know, also if you go out in first place, you know, there's going to be more than just more TV time on ESPN in that event. But everything that comes with it over the next year, you're going to be very much in the limelight.
Absolutely. Yeah, when you win the November 9 and when you take this thing down and get the bracelet, yeah, you'll be amazed that the doors are suddenly open and the different things that are going on.
I saw one thing about Jason that asked, can he go from worst to first? And I thought to myself, you know, 9th out of 7,300 is not worst.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely not. But it's worse in this situation. And I certainly think I can go to first. It's going to be more difficult than if I were going in with a bigger stack, there's no doubt about it. You know, so my odds of winning are certainly lower. But, you know, I know it's definitely a possibility. Actually, on day of the main event this year, I went into the day, maybe 78 people left, and I was in like 76, treaded water all day and got to a point where I was down to 7 or 8 big blinds. And I ran up from maybe 350,000 chips to 13.5 million in a matter of a few hours and went into the final day 4th in chips. So I at least have some recent experience knowing that, you know, things can go your way. And if everything clicks, it certainly is a situation where I could win this thing.
Well, yeah. One last question, and it's not even a fair one to ask, but I'm going to anyhow. You're going in 9th in chips. What do you consider a victory? I mean, obviously you want to win the whole thing, but if you come in 3rd, if you come in 5th, if you come in 7th, you've already won a major deal by making it in the top 9. You know, what's your next plateau, shall we say?
Well, you know, I've given this a bit of thought and certainly have to give it more as I move on, and it, you know, it's not something I'd want to discuss too much of from a strategy standpoint.
I understand that.
But I'm looking at this final table going, okay, I made it to the November 9, next step is to win. So that's my goal.
And we already know one of his other goals, not being made fun of for folding queens.
Yeah, it's certainly not that big of a deal. It's just something that I know will come up, and that's all well and good. I'm very comfortable with the situation. And as Dennis said, good poker players, I think, will recognize whether or not it was good. But the good thing about poker is it doesn't matter what all the bad players think about you.
Yeah, actually, if they think of you're a bad player, then you can surprise them.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
And
remember the grinder laying down his set to a pure bluff, but he went on to win the tournament.
Yep.
Big difference there, guys.
Absolutely.
Jason, we appreciate your time today. Thank you very much. Good luck in November. We hope to be able to talk to you afterwards about that experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on. I'd be happy to come on after November, after I'm, you know, fortunate enough to take this thing down, and I look forward to meeting up with you, Dennis, at the EPT.
Sounds like a date to me.
Okay.
November Niner Jason Sentai joining us here at the final table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris, live from Harrah's on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. This portion of our show brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the group that a couple weeks ago had that victory in the Barney Frank subcommittee of the United States House by passing H.R. 2267 and pushing it on to the rest of the House. That doesn't mean that we are going to get a decision out of Congress anytime soon, as Dennis and I have talked about many, many times. But it does mean that your membership in the Poker Players Alliance is helping a lot, because this is the lobbying organization for poker players like you and me. Go to the website, theppa.org. That's theppa.org. And join up. Don't just go there and find out what the latest news is with the bill or other things that we're doing legally, but join us. It costs you $20. That's not even a buy-in in a home game these days, for goodness sake. Become a member of the Poker Players Alliance and join the fight for poker in every form. And on that subject, Dennis, I saw an article this week about possibly making this bill not a standalone bill, but getting it on as an attachment. What do you know about that?
Actually, there's been some discussion before on that. I don't know whether it's going to happen or not, but to get it as an attachment could expedite the whole thing. Standing on its own, then you have to have your own hearings and that. If you can put it as an attachment, this could expedite. This is the only chance we probably have to get this through before the elections. And it definitely would be a great way to get it through on that lame duck session there.
Yeah. This, by the way, is how UIGEA passed.
Exactly.
It did not
pass. That would be appropriate.
It did not pass as a standalone bill.
Nope.
It passed as an amendment to a massive funding bill that was snuck in the middle of the night by some congressional weasels.
In fact, I will go as far as to say it would not have passed as a standalone.
I think
there's
absolutely
no way
right.
It would have done.
Absolutely right. So, theppa.org for more information on this and other things in the battle to keep poker legal in all of its forms. One more plug, and that is for thechipleader.com. That's Dennis's website. That's where you get podcasts of the show. That's where you can find the link to subscribe via iTunes. It's also where you'll find the link for Final Table merchandise, like T-shirts and hats and sweatshirts. Has there ever been one piece of clothing more vital to poker than the sweatshirt, considering how cold poker rooms are? Even in the 100-degree summers we have in St. Louis, get your Final Table sweatshirt now with lower shipping fees at thechipleader.com. Dennis and I will be back here at Harrah's St. Louis next week. We hope to see you then on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.